Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. Our guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can call in questions for him to our telephone number, 765-496-1999. You can email questions to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. You're a brave man. You came over without an umbrella today in this rain.
Well, you know, somebody, when I was a kid, they often accused me of not having enough sense to get out of the rain, and I guess it's been proven to be factual.
That's how you get to be mayor,
right? Yeah, and that's the other thing that proves lack of sense right there,
right.
Being mayor.
So let me start with some questions that have come in from listeners. Matt has written in with a couple of questions about Sagamore Parkway, and he says, in the past, Mayor Dennis, you've mentioned that the city has little power over traffic flow and design for intersections on US 52 or Sagamore Parkway West. Now that the city controls Sagamore Parkway from the river to US 231, are there plans to enhance traffic flow and safety? And he gives a couple of examples. About traffic flow, he says, stoppage of four-lane traffic on Sagamore occurs constantly and often when very few cars approach the intersection and trigger lights. A good portion of these are cars turning right, which do not need to cross the intersection, and yet traffic is still halted. He says, on a typical drive between Klondike and Nighthawk, our family encounters 9 red lights and almost always has to stop at each one, regardless of the time of day or the amount of traffic. And so he wants to know what's to be done about traffic flow.
Well, he's a little premature. We have not yet gone through the relinquishment process to actually get 52. And once we do, it is part of the arterial changing that we're going to be going through. We have, for several years now, tried to figure out better ways to get traffic around West Lafayette. And, you know, we've done this before so many times. We're the most densely populated city in the state of Indiana, and we're about 26 in the country, and it's because of Purdue and because of the fact that people live up. That would be on high-rises and in dorms. And with that understanding, there's a lot of cars that go on the road as well. So what we've been trying to do with State Street, which really isn't a good example to discuss about today, and with some of the other road work that we've done, is we've tried to increase the number of routes that take you north and south in West Lafayette, then also east and west. The way the state works, it's magic, is that when they realize a corridor that was traditionally a state-designated highway is becoming more of an urban road or an inner-city road, they go through what's called a relinquishment process. And that process basically involves them either giving the city-involved money to rehab the road and make it more suitable for that particular location, or to go ahead and redo it themselves with a bit of a wink and a nudge and a suggestion by local government, and then surrender the road to them. Where we stand right now is we're in that process of negotiating whether it's going to be a lump sum or whether the state is going to give us that road in better shape than what it is in right now. And what will be part of that process will be synchronizing the lights. A lot of the lights right now, at least the ones that are here in West Lafayette, have they're in what's called a loop. Each light is looped, and we are in the process of implementing a computerized traffic control program that will allow for us to basically manually, or I guess not necessarily manually, but electronically manipulate the signals so that they can be a little bit more responsive to traffic flow. We know that when we lose about 30,000 vehicles in the summer, that the backups aren't going to be as significant, and possibly the timing needs to be changed so that we could have greater flow based on the change in volume of traffic.
Is that harder to do, though, in the summer when you don't have the full complement of cars that will be there during peak periods during the school year?
Not really. Not at all. Because, again, when they're all sequenced correctly, then you just have an easy flow. We have, in years past, you know, people have accused us for biting off more than we can chew when it comes to trying to get the signalization. Man, I am having a tough time talking today. You're going to have to work with me, Stan. The signalization coordinated throughout our city. Because, again, when you have that density of vehicles, when you have that number of cars traveling at one time, it does create a challenge. And for us, because of the way that our schools are located with each other, Purdue University, the way the timing works for all of those different groups, and then our business community, you know, there really is this hard-hitting volume of traffic, regardless of the student population.
So you've talked for a while about wanting to put in this computerized system, mm-hmm. that will allow you to, from a central location, change some of the timings, affect traffic flows. What's the latest on the full installation and implementation of that?
It's in progress. I mean, our engineers, our engineer department, Ed Garrison is our city engineer. We're in the process of getting that implemented. Now, again, that requires working at each intersection. You have to loop each intersection, and then you have to make sure that it matches up with the software. So it is in progress. And, but that's not going to help solve the problem on 52 right now. But what we're doing here locally, insofar as the roads that we do have control over, it's in progress. Some of them, like on Salisbury, for example, are being utilized.
What's the deadline for getting it done?
I'd love to say as soon as I say so, but it really doesn't work that way. It depends when we can afford to do it. Some of those things can get pretty expensive. You need to make sure that the traffic signals are going to be responsive to the technology, and sometimes that requires, you see those little silver boxes at the bottom of the poles? That requires going in there and basically putting in new guts so that it can receive that and then also be able to transmit it to a centralized location so a traffic engineer can go ahead and do the necessary dialing in.
So there's deadline for getting this done. You don't have a date by which you expect this to be done.
I would think within the next year, we'll probably be pretty close to getting that done. Again, assuming that there isn't any significant problems with some of our signals. Some of those things are really old. And some of the boxes, you know, we've got engineers from the street department that go out there and service them, unfortunately, sometimes daily. And a lot of that equipment's getting old, and it really is. It's just a matter of cost versus efficiency.
Let me get to Matt's other question, which gets to the safety along Sagamore. He says, with the addition of more and more retail and housing, especially between Cumberland and 231, pedestrian traffic and public transport use is increasing. He says, there are no crosswalks available for safe crossing. As a result, pedestrians are often put in danger. There are also no sidewalks along Sagamore Parkway north of Cumberland, he says, despite multiple bus stops and retail locations. And so I guess his question comes down to, with all of this expansion and modernization of the road, what are you doing and why aren't you doing more, perhaps, on the arterial stuff, the stuff that goes away or on the sides of the road to make sure that everybody stays safe, especially if you're not in a car?
Well, it gets back to how we do business, and it gets back to how we address some of our issues when you look at the entire footprint of the city. When it comes to roads and streets, we have what's called a capital plan. And what we do with that is we basically have our engineers and our interns go out and drive the roads, and they devise a strategy on which roads need to have the most work done. And then we go ahead and program that into our capital plan. And so what it basically equates down to is you've got bad roads, you've got a finite amount of money, and you've got a timeline. And so because roads, unfortunately, aren't very cooperative when it comes to deterioration, especially when you live in the Midwest, when you've got really hot summers and really cold winters and a lot of water, that has and then a lot of trucks, too. That has a tendency to really rip your roads up. So we try to get the roads as best as we can, and when we touch a road, it used to be that we would touch a road, and what we would do is we just either put what they call a micro cover on it, which is just a little bit of asphalt, and call that a done deal. What we try and do now is when we get the roads that really are requiring a significant amount of service, is we replace the road, replace the curbs, the sidewalks, add a trail if we have enough room, and then completely redo the road. And that strategy has been something we've been using now for about the past 5 or 6 years. So the roads are programmed into a capital plan, and again, just to kind of go over, the roads are programmed into a capital plan. We fund the roads as the revenue allows, and we get to them as their time comes up.
You mentioned that water is a concern on some of the roads. I want to get to another question that's come in from a caller who wants to know, if it keeps raining like this, will the State Street workers work on, for instance, Saturdays and Sundays to try to stay on schedule with that project?
I would think so. And again, we've talked about this much too. The whole purpose of the State Street project, I mean, outside of all the operational stuff, the business side of it is that the company that is doing the work is on a very restricted timeline. I mean, there is some days that are packed in there because of inclement weather, but there is a certain drop-dead date when they need to get done. And if they're not done, then they pay a penalty. So they will, in all likely, work on weekends, work on holidays, and work in the evenings before it would be disruptive for the residents around the area to get the project done.
Already seen, for instance, the Board of Public Works approving noise ordinance variances to allow them to work overnight, for instance, at the intersection of State and River. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about the possibility that people get disturbed by this project, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, I talked with Ed Garrison, and he seemed to say that he didn't think very loud work was going to happen overnight. But nonetheless, if you're asking for a variance in the noise ordinance and you're asking to do it overnight, I mean, you're asking for people to get bothered, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the whole project's bothersome. I mean, I don't know of any road project that's ever been, you know, applauded when it was in progress. You know, Happy Hollow, we just finished that up, and it is really a beautiful stretch of roadway. But it was a pain, and it was a pain for every resident that lived up and down Happy Hollow. But when we cut the ribbon and opened it up, just like, yay. I mean, they were actually delighted that it was done. State Street's no different. We did, several years ago, we put a bridge over Lindbergh. That was an area that flooded all the time. It was, had some real issues with water. And the way that the bridge was done is we had to pound in a bunch of pylons. We had to pound in all these different things into the ground. And that was annoying. I mean, I felt so bad for the residents. I mean, because it was that continuous ongoing pounding. And it's the same thing that's going on actually down there on 52, the Wabash bridges that they're putting in. It's the same philosophy. They're building, they're pounding those things in there. So it is a disruptive process. It is a pain. It is noisy. It's dirty. And when you have weather like this, I mean, it seems as though the entire surface is just made of silly putty. And there's also does a stick to everything. And then the equipment that they use, it just has a tendency to sink because the clay that we have here is just such a tacky surface anyway.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis today on the program. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email ask at WBAA.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Speaking of State Street, one of the stories we've been covering this week is the closing of the Von's Dough Shack, which to me seems like it could be the canary in the coal mine here because its owners say it is due to the State Street redesign, cutting off their ability to bring in enough customers to stay open. And they say they have talked with other local business owners in the area, several of whom are expecting additional closures because you've got a number of low-margin, locally-owned shops, especially up there at the top of the hill. Do you accept that their rationale is correct, that the State Street project is forcing local closures of business?
Nope.
Why not?
Well, because we have done road projects before. We have had some pretty invasive projects that go on in the business community. And I've had the fortunate experience to work on both sides of the river. And I know that it is a burden. It is cumbersome. But here in the city of West Lafayette, we are doing everything that we as local government can do to make sure that people understand that that entire stretch of State Street, and again, I think this is a cliche that I know I've definitely overused, is open for business.
Except that it's not open for business.
And now, see, that's very rude, Stan. You don't point a finger and say, hang on.
Well, except that it's my show.
Good point. You can throw stuff if you want, I guess.
So one of the decisions you made was to close the road, not to have a lane going in either direction, but to try to do this as quickly as possible. Yeah. You made the decision actively to close the entire road. So you could have had traffic flow by these local businesses. Instead, your decision was, we want to get this done in 3 years, and so we're going to shut the whole thing down so we can try to do it as fast as possible. How can you say that's not effective on the businesses along that stretch?
Well, I'm not saying that it doesn't have an effect on them. I'm saying that it's not going to cause businesses to close. You know, we live in a college community. And like we have talked about just a few minutes ago when it comes to traffic, you know, our population swings significantly throughout the summer months. Those businesses specifically have more pedestrian traffic than they do vehicular traffic. So our job is to make sure that people can get up and down the sidewalks, access the businesses as efficiently as possible. But even more importantly, we need to do something to incentivize people to go down there. We've got a group. It's called the Big Car Collaborative, and basically what they do is they do a ton of outdoor events. It could be poetry reading. It could be finger painting. It could be concerts. It could be anything. And the sole purpose of us hiring this group is to make sure that we have even more opportunities to attract people to our downtown area.
I understand that. And we talked about that this morning with your development director, Eric Carlson.
Was Eric on today?
He was on this morning on our wake-up call with Chris Pizza. Well, he talked about the program. And here's the thing about it. It's closing two stretches of road in West Lafayette. And I suppose if your business is along one of those stretches of road, then you could say, fine, we're going to get more pedestrian traffic. Mm-hmm. But the majority of businesses, of course, are not. And even some of the businesses that are, like the Campus Inn Hotel at the bottom of State Street Hill, mm-hmm. says, well, wait a minute. What you're going to do when you close off Brown Street there is you're going to have what Eric Carlson this morning on the show called a mixing zone of people. And that is precisely what the hotel owner is worried about, especially mm-hmm. late at night when you've got people walking to and from bars and things like that, and you've got road construction in that area. He says, this is going to be a jungle, and are people going to stay safe? And that's a question that hasn't adequately been answered mm-hmm. as we're trying to ameliorate some of the local businesses.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can tell you is that we'll do the best that we can. You know, and again, I know that everybody in my department over there in the city is acutely aware of issues involving student safety. When we did the combined sewer overflow, the big pipe down there on River Road in 231, that was an issue of safety, and we managed it very well. This isn't something that's new. We have been working on this project for about 6 years now. We have done everything. And Eric, to his credit, Eric Carlson is doing as much as he physically can. He's going door-to-door on the businesses and making sure if things aren't going well, what we as local government can do to improve it. But, you know, we have had these type of projects before on both sides of the river.
Right. But this is not like any project West Lafayette's ever done before.
Well,
you've said exactly that on this program.
This is very true. But, I mean, I can't sit here in all honesty and say that this is going to be destructive to our businesses. It requires creativity. It requires a cooperative environment between the business community and local government and Purdue University and the students and the Exponent and the Journal and Courier and you. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to pull everything out that we can. We're going to – what's the cliche I'm looking for? Pull out all the stops to make sure that we are going to do everything that we can to get people down there to patronize those businesses. The Dough Shack closing, that was unfortunate.
When you were looking at the design of this project, did you take a look from business to business along that corridor and go, which of these might be most imperiled if we do it this way?
No, because because we believe they all are. We believe that the potential, but by closing down the street, you just need to be extremely aware of how fragile that environment can be.
Okay, so I'm gonna stop you again here because just a second ago you said mm-hmm. State Street is not responsible for the Dough Shack closing, but then you just said a moment ago that you admitted that all of those businesses are imperiled by the project. Which is it? It can't be both.
Well, Stan, let's quit harvesting words and just get down to brass tacks here. The fact of the matter that we're going to deal with here is we are dealing with a construction project that will be inconvenient for the businesses up and down State Street, period. Businesses that have had a high volume of activity are going to continue to have a volume of activity that will be conducive to keeping their businesses open. If businesses were in a circumstance that they might not have been as successful, well, then that possibility is very strong that this could be the last straw. This could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. But we are not going to sit idly by and let that happen. We are going to do everything that we can to make sure that their businesses thrive. That's all that we can do as local government. The street project obviously is going to take this particular portion of the project should be drivable by the end of this fall. That is the point. That is the whole target that we're shooting for. So this isn't some long-term closure. We should be in a position to get people back on the streets, hopefully by the end of this year.
So here's one of the other concerns that's been levied is you're talking about the margin of a business. And if you look at what a local business does in terms of margin versus what a piece of a larger chain does, I mean, we're talking about very different mm-hmm. calculations in terms of a margin. And there is some concern that as you kind of craft this downtown, which your city has never had, and I started thinking about other Big Ten college downtowns that I've been to in Bloomington and Ann Arbor and mm-hmm. Iowa City in places mm. like that. And they all have this really kind of neat local character that to me is embodied by a college town. Mm-hmm. And the worry from some of the local business owners now that I keep hearing is, are we going to have nothing but chain businesses when this is done? It's going to be a very pretty street, mm-hmm. but how many of us are going to be left to have that quirky local character that you expect out of a college town? How do you plan to balance the chain businesses Which can come in and probably do large amounts of investment, help your property taxes, which we know the city needs to pay mm-hmm. back the $60 million cost, mm-hmm. versus having that local character that draws people in to the downtown you're trying to build?
You know, I don't know. I mean, we do what we can to keep the businesses that are here, the homegrown businesses that are here, here. We also do what we can to make sure that, as you said, that we can get some good development and good investment in our community. But there is only so much we can do. I know that when we talk about businesses like Harry's and things like that, those are legendary in our community, and I don't think they ever need to worry about their success. And one thing about a college community that's different than, say, you know, any town USA, is that our student population oftentimes dictates the popularity of a business, and it's generally by word of mouth. And we know that that can be beneficial for a local business, and sometimes it can be detrimental to a local business, and that's why we have so much turnover. But we will do, like I said before, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we will do what we can to make sure that the look and feel of West Lafayette stays the same. You know, we really like what we are. You know, we're really happy with what we are, and we don't want to do anything to taint that. The entire focus of the street project, yes, the State Street project, yes, is to bring basically, it allows for us to be able to do a great deal of work in a very short period of time and to give us that downtown feel, because we don't have a downtown. But we don't want to lose our soul when we do so. And by doing what we can here at local government with Eric Carlson and his team doing as much as they can, communicating with the businesses, finding out what we need to do to continue to get traffic to those businesses during the duration of this project, by bringing in vendors who are going to do things outside of these businesses to draw attention to these businesses, and then Eric going door to door on almost a weekly basis to find out how things are going, I think we're doing about as much as we can do, short of bringing in helicopters.
Let's move on to another topic. I wanted to go back to a conversation you and I had Saturday of last week about a recently passed bill which would give, frankly, sweeping new authority to cell phone companies to put up what they call these micro cell phone towers. And I spoke yesterday with Senator Brant Hirschman, who wrote the bill mm-hmm. and, of course, is from Tippecanoe County. He says he thinks that it was an overreaction that some 100 Indiana municipalities, including yours, mm-hmm. wrote new rules by a May 1st deadline to try to change how that bill affects those communities. Do you think he's right? Did the Board of Public Works overreact when it passed a resolution last Saturday to try to keep more local control with the city?
I don't think so at all. We do what we do because we need to be careful about what goes on in our community. And in West Lafayette, we feel very strongly about making sure that we maintain that a particular look and feel. We're kind of unique like that. And we're not saying no to technology. We're not saying no to advancing some of the resources that we have when it comes to cellular technology. But we are saying no to the lack of local control over that. And what did you say, over 100 local?
I hear from the group AIM, which I know lobbied you and a number of other cities to make these changes.
Well, actually, it was different than that. We were in Japan. And Tony Rozorski and I, Mayor Rozorski and I, are sitting on a bus heading down the road in Japan, and he leans over and says, "Did you see this?" And I looked at his phone, and I looked at mine, had the same email, and it was from AIM. We got the notification from AIM, and we actually both started doing the same thing on our cities on either side of the bus. But yeah, I mean, that's what we do. We try to make sure that we can maintain, you know, I guess, the look and feel of our community. And we did with this specific legislation.
Let me play for you for a second a piece of the interview I had yesterday with Senator Hirschman. And we're talking about whether there needs to be control at the local level or whether the rights of the cell phone companies would win out. And I wanted to play for you just a little bit of that exchange. Here it is. If okay. that May 1st deadline had not been met, it would have been very easy for cell phone companies to come in and do things like put these micro cell towers on utility poles or on traffic signals, things like that. And it would have made it harder, correct, for the municipalities to write rules after May 1st that would allow them to regulate how that happens. Is that a fair reading of the bill?
Stan, that's the fundamental intent of the bill, is to preempt local ordinances on this.
So I want to know, are you comfortable with that idea that the author of the bill says that he is trying to head off home rule in this case? And this is for you to respond to here. Do you think Senator Hirschman is right in trying to head off home rule?
No, I don't think so. we have often had a struggle when it comes to doing some of the things that, a college community needs to do, because a cookie cutter approach to every city in the state of Indiana probably isn't the best way to go, because we're all different, we're all unique, and we all have our own special needs based upon our citizenry that needs to be addressed. You know, Brant's a good guy, don't get me wrong, and I know that his intent is sincere. I know he wants to do the right thing for not just the community here that he serves, but for the state of Indiana. But had we had a little bit more advance notice, we probably could have had some conversations about it. You know, the group of us, we were out of town, so we sort of didn't have the opportunity to get in touch with Brant. But right now, we just, you know, we had to do something to preserve our independence on this. And something else, I know that oftentimes people look at our legislative branches within the cities and think that they're cumbersome and that it takes, you know, these great movements to get anything to happen. But specifically the Board of Works, it's one of the most agile boards that we have. They meet weekly. And that's what I'm glad that we actually had that opportunity to present it to the Board of Works, because had we needed to call an emergency meeting of the council, it might have had a different result. But this legislation put us in a position where we had to make an immediate decision about home rule. We did it, and we're delighted with what we've done. I don't see where it's going to hurt us. I can't imagine, you know, what harm it could create. But I think if there is one lesson to be learned, it's that, first off, we've got a great group of volunteers that work for the city of West Lafayette. They immediately came in. And second off, we're going to do what's best for our community. And I think most mayors around the state of Indiana would take the same approach. They want to do what's best for their community.
So let me ask one more quick question in just our last minute or two here. One way you could make the senator's argument that cities overreacted is, he says, you know, some cities made their entire boundaries this underground utility district, which the bill says is a way that you can have more local control. Mm-hmm. I don't know about what your city's resolution has done. Is that what you have done? Is the entire city is this zone?
No, actually, our city attorney, Eric Burns, decided that because the bill or our response required a dedication of specific areas instead of just generalizing, he felt that if we went ahead and dedicated specific areas that would be exempt from this bill, that it would be less likely to be overruled. So we were a little bit more specific about it.
So you were somewhat worried about legal action overturning what you were doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we were standing on good, sound legal ground.
And so what areas in our last 30 seconds or so have you dedicated? Can you give me a general area?
Yeah, it's pretty much our downtown area. It's pretty much all of our major arterials. And then there's language in regards to with respect to residential areas. So yeah, it's probably pretty much all of the city of West Lafayette and the recently annexed areas, but it's more specified in the actual verbiage of the ordinance so that it keeps it – it's a little cleaner than saying everything, you know, within the city. It's a little bit more definitive than
but
that.
But it is a good portion of the city.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good – and some of it, because it's vague when you talk about near residential areas, that empowers us to be a little bit more – open-minded about it as well.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we've run out of time. Thanks, as always, for your time. Went quickly this half hour, but we'll do it again next month.
Yeah, it's because you yelled at me, Stan.
That's right. And that's what we do here every so often.
Every so often. It's got to happen.
We like to keep our guests in line here on Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for listening to the show today. Remember that all of these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org, and we'll be on at this time next week with our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him. You can email those in advance to ask@WBAA.org. Feel free also to tweet questions @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.